Okay, we are going to be discussing the holiday of Purim tonight, and we'll look at another angle on the Milchemet Amalek, and you're going to find a few very interesting ideas, and hopefully we'll have something we can take with us into Purim. We've had a lot already, and we'll try to put some more on the table here. Okay, famous Gemara Megillah, the students of Shem Bar Yochai asked him, why were the Jewish people in that generation deserving of annihilation? And Rav Shimon said, why don't you guys tell me an answer? What do you think? So they say it's because they enjoyed the feast of that wicked one, Ahasuerus. And you should really take out those words, and partook of the forbidden foods. The Gemara doesn't really say that, but there's some commentators who say that. Okay, fine. Anyway, they enjoyed being at the feast. Okay, Rav Shimon said, if so, then those of Shushan should have been killed as punishment, but those in the rest of the world who did not participate in the feast should not have been killed. So, okay, so you tell us the answer. He said, because they prostrated before the idol in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, after he conquered Yerushalayim and led them off into Babel, he told the Jews to bow down to him and to his idols. And they did it. And because of that, they deserved annihilation. There's a little bit added interpretation of that is when Haman was around, he had an idol around his neck, and people bowed down to his idol. So they said, okay, if that's the case, they did a really bad sin, so why does Hashem let them off? Is there favoritism here? If they did such a sin, they deserve to get killed, and they should have deserved to get killed. So he said, no, they didn't really worship the idol, but pretended to do so only for appearance, acting as if they were carrying out the king's command to bow before the idol. In other words, it was lipanim. It was outward. They really didn't believe it. So too, Hashem did not destroy them, but did not angry with them, only for appearance. So Hashem made a look on the outside like that. It's such a difficult Gemara to understand. It's unbelievable. To understand how difficult this Gemara is to understand. The Gemara is suggesting, well, they really didn't want to do it. They just showed that they did it. So Hashem really never intended on killing them. Oh, really? Okay, what would have happened if Mordechai and Esther would not have been involved? You tell me what would have happened. We got all wiped out. Okay? So what do you tell me that God never planned it that way? You know, we're lucky. We're lucky. I'm not going to say lucky, but the fact, you know, if Esther and Mordechai were not there, and a lot of these events that we know from the story would not have happened, the Jews would have got killed. Plain and simple. So what kind of answer? Well, they really didn't. They really didn't worship. They didn't want to. I mean, they did. They did. And, they worshipped again with Haman, and how does that help? And even so, the people in Shushan, obviously, that must have been a serious thing. Even though he rejected their answer, the fact that Talmud brings it, there must have been some credence to that. They enjoyed being at the meal, but like, so I mean, I guess the next time you do an avera, you didn't really want to do it. You know, your friends pressured you into it. You know, someone's talking lashon hara to you at a wedding, and you feel very awkward stopping them because everyone's going to think you're weird. So I really didn't listen, you know, I didn't want to, but I did. Okay, so what does that mean? So now nothing ever happens to you? What do you mean nothing happened? But you did it. You did it. And the truth of the matter is, they should have got destroyed. It was miraculous. So what do you mean God only did it for appearance sake? What does that mean? Okay, so we have to understand what that means. He only did it lipanim. Okay, you know? So you could be dead lipanim. You could apparently be dead. It's a difficult Gemara. It's a difficult Gemara. Let's move on. Gemara Chulin says, where is there a hint to Esther from the Torah? The events of the Purim story. So the Torah says at the end of Sefer Devarim, when the Jewish people did a lot of sins, it's going to be really bad for us. V'anochi haster astir. I will hide my face. A double expression, haster astir. Okay, what's the difference between a single expression of hiding and a double expression of hiding? Yeah, Hashem could have said, v'anochi haster.
Haster, it's I physically will hide. Okay. But I will use somebody else to do the haster panim. It's by... using Mordechai and Esther.
Okay, we'll see how this. What's the double expression?
The second
here?
Word, if you take Yud, it's Esther. I know. With Esther, I stop on him.
So just say Anochi Astir. I will hide. That's all. Okay. I will hide, and the Jewish will be killed, and I'll be hiding.
Yeah,
it's enough. What's the double hiding here?
He did it in the Holocaust.
We have to see what is. Maybe he was just hiding.
No,
he was just hiding. What's hiding and double hiding? Third question. Mordechai hears about the plot for Bigson and Seresh to kill Achashverosh. Achashverosh already has a record of being a Sonei Yisrael Otsum. It was under his kingship that he stopped the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. It was under his kingship that he had this party that totally disgraced everything Judaism was about. So I don't get this. Mordechai is hearing a plot to kill the king. So let him kill him! That's one of the biggest kashas of the whole Megillah. Imagine, try to put this in the right perspective. Imagine you happen to be a Jewish minister in Nazi Germany in the late 1930s, and you hear there's a plot, and there were many plots, to assassinate Hitler. So let him. Let's say good riddance to bad rubbish. He's a Sonei Yisrael. He was not married. He was married to Esther. Even better, he'll get killed, and then who'll take over?
Esther.
Esther was given full queenly status. She wasn't, as we mentioned last Shabbos, she wasn't just the wife. She was given sovereign status.
Yeah.
So this is amazing. He doesn't have to do any shev va'al tase. It's not like he has to talk to Esther and they're going to think they're in cahoots. Just mind your own business. Walk away. Let them kill him. Be finished with him. It's like mamish, a bomb kasha. I don't know why it took me till this year to figure that question out. It's like, isn't that a great question?
The new king that comes into power.
I can't wait
could
for
be
the
worse.
Answer.
Esther's the new. She's the next in succession.
Until 50%.
What? No, she is the next sovereign in line.
But the Jews needed to be shipped.
Wonderful.
The whole thing to play.
But still, this is a great opportunity.
They were away from Judaism.
Okay, let's see. Let's move on. Source number four. So now everyone's bowing down to Haman, and that was the rule. And Mordechai wouldn't. And all the people there are saying to him, "Why are you disobeying the king's order?" And he continues to disobey. Again, the question is, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, there's certain halachas, for example. Gemara says, when you see that the Shah misachekes for the Russia, when you see that a Russia's time is, his star is shining, don't contend with him. Don't contend with him, because that means Hashem is favoring this fellow, and leave him alone. And Mordechai, like, you could have just, okay, you don't want to bow down to him, fine. Just don't show up. Make yourself a scatter. What are you getting involved for this for? Let's move on. So let's go. That's some of the Megillah questions. And now let's backtrack to something that now obviously we know that the Mordechai Haman clash is the clash between Klal Yisrael and Amalek. But let's go back to an earlier clash, to the ancestors of this being Esav and Yaakov. Let's talk a little bit about them. So I'm quoting you from the Pirkei de Reb Eliezer. It really spells out really nicely, and that's where Rashi takes some of his interpretations. So the night that Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav was none other than Pesach night. It was the first Seder. And Yitzchak calls Esav in, and he says, tonight the heavens are open. It's a great day for blessings. Prepare for meat while I'm alive. I will bless you. So he went to go, and he got delayed. Rivka says to Yaakov, she says the same, this is a big day to get blessings. You prepare the meat. And Yaakov, who really knew a lot about the Torah, he was afraid he's going to get cursed by his father. Maybe my father will feel me and he'll see me as Kim Satea. I think I'm mocking him and he'll curse me. So she said, my son, if it be a blessing, may it be upon you and upon your seed. If it be a curse, it'll be upon me and upon my soul. As the Pasuk says, upon me your curse will be. Fine. He went and he got the sheep, one for the Pesach offering, one for the meat to eat. Fine. Now, how was Rivka so certain about this? So the Targum Onkelos on the words "Valai kilas bini" basically says, the mother said, I got a prophecy. You're not going to get cursed. I got a prophecy. I heard that your father wants to bless him. I have a prophecy. You're not going to get cursed. You can get the blessings. It's not a problem. So that made Yaakov okay, so to speak. Again, the question has to be asked. I don't understand. If this isn't woman's intuition here, this is a prophecy. So if you have a prophecy, she should walk right over to Yitzchak and say, I want you to know, dear husband, I just got a prophecy. You're supposed to give the bracha to Yaakov. Finished. And that's it. End of story. What are we playing games for over here? So that needs to be addressed. We've talked about these issues in the past. But we're going to try to show you a new idea to this tonight. So that's an interesting question. And then, of course, Yaakov gets closer to him, and he goes in. We know the famous words, Hakol kol Yaakov, Yadayim Yaday Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav. Why is that? Feels like Esav, because he's wearing the big day chamudot. He's wearing the special clothes that Esav wore. He has the sheepskin put on him. Yet his voice sounded like Esav. There's a lot of discussion. Many said they had identical voices, but he was talking more like an Esav. The name of Hashem, he said, you know, how did you hurry up so good? Oh, Hashem, help me. So it sounds a little bit the way Yaakov talks. Okay, so he's got a doubt. I'm not sure. You feel like Esav. You sounds more like Yaakov. Okay, now you're giving important blessings now, right? So what should Yitzchak have done at this point in the game?
So who you are?
He asked who he was. He says, I am. Esav is your firstborn. He answered the question. Well, you know what? If you're giving such an important bracha, how could you do it if you're still not sure? Right? So what he said, come close so I will... He wasn't sure. He's come close. He goes, oh, you feel like Esav, but you sound like Yaakov. Well, it's 50-50. Ask a few more questions. Be a little bit more. So must be, the only thing he could say is, he was satisfied. So why was he satisfied? How can you say he's satisfied if he just here? He was doubtful. Okay, let's continue. And let's take this battle between Yaakov and Esav to the very beginnings. Rashi tells us from the Medrash, when Esav and Yaakov were born, that Esav came out first. We know that. But Rashi brings down from the Medrash, he says, really, Yaakov was justified. Remember, he's holding on to Esav's heel. So he was justified in holding it back. Why? Because when you have the twins, you're conceiving two fetuses. Yaakov was conceived from the first drop of conception. And Esav from the second. He says, go and learn from a tube with a narrow opening. Put into it two stones, one after the other. The one that goes in first will come out last. And the one that goes in last will come out first. It comes that Esav, who was conceived last, came out first. And Yaakov, who was conceived first, came out last. And so Yaakov came to hold him back so that the first for birth would be the same as the first for conception. That's what he wanted. And he would open up his mother's womb and get the status of the Bechor. That's what he wanted to do. But he was not successful, and Esav came out. So really, what is this debate between Yaakov and Esav all about? Well, Esav says very plainly, I'm the firstborn, I broke through my mother's womb, and I have the status of the Bechor. Yaakov says, well, maybe you came out first, but I was conceived first. Okay, so the question is, so what's the halacha? What's the halacha today if somebody has twins? Who's the Bechor?
The one who comes out first.
The one who comes out first.
Yeah.
What if the scientists will tell us that the one who came out first was conceived second? What's going to be the halacha? The halacha is he's still the Bechor.
Right.
You know, sorry, Yaakov, we have to go with halacha. The halacha is who comes out first. And Esav really is right. Esav's really right. So what's this debate all about? So the Mefarshim say a very interesting idea. They say there's a difference before the Torah was given and after the Torah was given. Because after the Torah was given, God gave us hard and fast rules. Once the Torah is here, we have to follow what the Torah says. And the Torah says, whichever one comes out first is a Bechor. But before the Torah is given, there's a whole different ballgame over here. And that's why you find a lot of interesting things. For example, Bilam is quoted as saying, Reishis Goyim Amalek. Amalek is the first of the nations. On the other hand, Moshe tells Paro in the name of Hashem, Bini Bechor Yisrael, the Jewish people are my firstborn. And Paro says, where are you getting that from? There were 70 nations here before you guys came onto the scene. Babel got split up into 70 nations. There were no Jews yet. You guys are Johnny come latelys. And Moshe obviously would answer, well, you know, Medrash says, you know, the words Bereishis, Barelo, Kimes, Hashemayim, Vesarz, Bereishis means Bishvil Torah, Shenikra Reishis, Bishvil Yisrael, Shenikra's Reishis. Meaning before God created the world, Hashem intended that there should be a Klal Yisrael. That the whole world was created only for the purpose of Klal Yisrael, even though we come out last. Right? So you have an idea that, yeah, there's what comes out first, but what's conceived first, not just in terms of Yaakov and Esav, but how about in the history of the world? What was God's original intent? What was his conception of the world? The conception of the world is the Jewish people who are masters of the world. Esav says, let's just go by what we see. So we're already having a great conflict is, do we decide things by what we see, or do we decide things by what they really are? And that argument has been with us since that time till today. Is reality what we see, or is reality what we don't see? But the reality from Hashem's perspective. And the reality is never clear how what we see. What we see is the exact opposite of what is. Okay? So now the question, so who is the right person over here? Well, Esau firmly believes, you know, what you see is what you get. I came out first, I'm the Bechor, and that's all there is to it. And Yaakov's saying, no, that doesn't mean anything. Well, who's the winner of this debate? The winner of this debate was decided by many people, but Yirmiyahu HaNavi had a very nice answer to all this. Look in source number 9. He says, but it is I who have bared Esav, have exposed his place of concealment he cannot hide. Meaning to say, Esav's the liar. Esav is the liar. The Navi is saying Esav is the liar. Which leads us to a fascinating chazal that you're all aware of, but I don't know if, hopefully there are going to be a few new insights into this tonight, based in the Medrash source number 10. And really, you could see the connection to next week's Parsha Shmini, trying to find connections. As you get into Sefer Yikra, it's kind of a little hard to figure out the connection to Purim, to all what's going on over here. But in Parsha Shmini, we're talking about the non-kosher animals. So what do we got here? We got the Chazir. All right. Now, what does it say? Vesa Chazir ki mafris parso. Okay, he's got split hooves. So who is this? This is going to be, as you're going to see, Edom Amalek. Loma nimshla Chazir. Why is the descendants of Esau compared to Chazir? Loma lach, to say, you've all heard this. Ma Chazir b'shashu roves. When the pig is crouching along, he sticks his feet out, saying he's kosher. So the Malchus Edom is very arrogant, and they steal and they plunder. Okay, and but he makes it look like he's a kosher guy, and they give a story of someone from that kingdom who catches a bunch of thieves and adulterers and sorcerers, he kills them all, and privately tells his officers, I do it all the time. Okay, so what's the message over here? What are we saying that Esav and his descendants are like the pig? So the simple meaning is, well, they make themselves on the outside look kosher and say they're not kosher. But let's take a little bit deeper. If you look in the source pasuk for this, in Vayikra, source 11, it says you can't eat a chazir. Why can't you eat a chazir? So it says, ki, because, mafris parso, because it chews its cud. It has split off. Right? You don't eat the chazir, because who shall say a shes? It's a different description of the split off. Right? It has true hooves, hoofs that are cleft through. Uhugeira lo yigar, but he doesn't chew his cud. So if I tell you can't eat the chazir, you'd say, why? Because he doesn't chew his cud. Why does it say because he has split hooves? Just tell us why he's not kosher. He's not kosher because he doesn't chew his cud. That would seem to be the reason. So some suggest ki means not because, even though that's a simile, but right. Although. Even though. Afalpi. It's kind of funny why the Torah has to tell us afalpi. Why would you just say you can't eat it because it doesn't chew its cud? Period. Good enough answer. You could figure out the rest for yourself, couldn't you? If you know what we know what the kosher signs are. So say, okay, you can't eat the pig because it doesn't chew its cud. Wouldn't that get the message across? Now, wouldn't you figure out on your own that maybe he has split hooves? Does it matter? Well, if it doesn't chew its cud, it's not kosher. What does it matter? So Tzadok HaKohen says a very fascinating insight, which I think many of you may not be aware of. What is this whole idea? Remember a number of months ago we discussed why the kosher signs of the fish are it has scales and fins. If you recall, we gave a beautiful Kabbalistic understanding what's the symbolism in the fins and the scales. So let's try to understand the way Reb Tzadok HaKohen explains. Why do they have to have those two kosher signs specifically? What's so special about those two kosher signs? So he says that if they have those two signs, that means those animals are good for themselves, as it were, and they're good for others as well. They're virtues. There are two virtues. What is the symbolism of an animal that chews its cud and doesn't swallow things quickly? What's the symbolism of that?
It's not a chazir.
It's not a chazir.
Right.
He's not a glutton.
Right.
You know, they say you're supposed to chew your teeth. Chew your food like 24 times. I forgot. How many teeth do you have? I forgot.
32.
I think you're supposed to chew your food 32 chews before you swallow it. And we, like if we chew once. Like tomorrow night after the Megillah, and you're going to get those luscious Hermes pastries. Uh-huh. Like they're going to go straight in. They're going to go out. Wow. In there, baby. But really, no, you know, you got to take it slow. Bridle your passions. And that's a good virtue to have. You just don't chazer, as they say. Right? So that means you're good. You're good in your own way to yourself. I can't call an animal a mensch, but you're a real domestic animal, whatever you want to say. But you're good for yourself in a healthy way. What is the idea if you don't have split hooves? Well, if you don't have split hooves, it's much easier to claw your prey and rip your prey to shreds and destroy others. Much easier. If you have split hooves, it's really not able to do that. I've seen the last time a cow clawed a bird to death. So it means you're good for others. You wouldn't hurt a fly. You wouldn't hurt anybody else. So we have two virtues. We have, so to speak, virtues bein adam, bein behema lamakom, between the animal and God. Inherently, the animal itself is not a glutton, which is a good virtue. And the other one is, you know, bein adam, bein behema la behema, bein adam la chavero, to his buddies. He's not destroying his buddies. And that's symbolically the food that we eat. It should be with that in mind. Now, the problem with the chazir, is the fact that it looks like he doesn't hurt others. He has his feet out. It's not just he's saying, I'm kosher. But what is that symbolism saying? I wouldn't hurt anybody. I wouldn't hurt anybody. But you wouldn't hurt anybody, but you're the biggest Baal Taiva in the world. Right? If you're like the pig, you're a glutton. Nothing stands in the way of your taivas. Nothing stands in the way of your taivas. How can you purport to say that I wouldn't hurt other people? That's a contradiction in and of itself. And Reb Tzadok uses this great line. I've quoted it in number 12. The sign of split hooves is only a sign of cleanliness for also one who chooses cut. If he doesn't chew his cud, that sign of cleanliness is worse than a sign of cleanliness. That itself makes you treif. It's not like he's half kosher. He's half kosher. He split hooves. He's halfway there. He's almost there. If only he would chew his cud, he'd be all there. No. The one kosher sign is only a kosher sign if the other sign is kosher. If one sign isn't kosher, the other, even the kosher sign isn't kosher. It's worse. And that's what the Torah is saying. You know why the pig is really treif? If he didn't chew his cud, not so bad. It's not so bad. But the fact is, hooves are split. Now that really makes him treif. Treif is treif to me. If an animal's got doesn't have split hooves and he doesn't chew his cud, okay, you know who you're dealing with. But if the guy honestly thinks that he really cares about humanity, he really does. Look, my hooves are split. I won't hurt a fly. But you're a glutton. You're the most treif thing imaginable, even though you don't believe it. Okay. And this is what Esav is all about. Esav is exactly, and the descendants of Esav, including Amalek, is this type of prototype, where they honestly think they love mankind. But the problem is, they're chazerim. It's not possible. You think you love mankind, and you think you're so kosher, and at the same time, what are you doing? You have so much internal taivas that you wouldn't even know what it was to hurt other people while you're swallowing them alive. Who would you say fits this really well? Liberals. Liberals, we care about people. Mothers, we care about mothers. Mothers have to be able to live their lives. So in order to let the mothers live their lives, we'll vote in the Congress that if she wanted to have an abortion and the baby, the abortion doesn't work and the baby comes out alive, you can kill it! You know why? Because we have so much compassion for people. Now, why are they saying that? Because they're chazerim! They want to be in power. But and you talk to them, you know how you're murderers. We're not murderers. We talk about we're pro-choice. We love people. It's because we're so compassionate. We'll kill this baby. You understand? And go try to tell them their treif. If they were chazerim too, if they didn't care about other people, honestly. Then you couldn't be fooled by them. But it's not only they're fooling us, they're fooling themselves. You ask them, and they talk to themselves in the mirror late at night. What do they think? I'm a great guy. I'm a great guy. I'm like, I'm unbelievable. Look how much I care about mothers. Nope. What did Adolf Hitler say? Adolf Hitler truly believed he was a humanitarian. No, if you look in his writings of Mein Kampf, he says, you know, we believe in social Darwinism, which means we want survival, we want, God has seen fit that for the world to get better, the stronger destroy the weaker, and that's how you get stronger. And don't we want society stronger? Do we want people to live till they're 100? Don't we care about people? Everywhere he writes about that. Right? But the real problem is such a baltaiva. I mean, Hitler was a pig. Maybe they dressed neat, but they were pig. I mean, he was just this whole comportment. Right? But once you already think you're really helping people, so now to help people, obviously the only way we can help people, you see these Jews, they're making everything go backwards. All this kindness and taking care of the infirm and all that, that's, are you crazy? You're going against the laws of nature, the laws of the jungle. And it's because of you we have all these problems. If we have sick people, if we just kill them all, you know, these won't go to another generation. And therefore you can legal, and that's how a whole country of very civil. The Germans were the most civil people in the world. The Amish were very courteous. Entschuldig, while I blow your head off. You know, excuse me, while I have to blow your head off. I'm just taking orders. Right? So this is what Esav is, and he honestly thinks that he's supposed to have all this. And it's not hard for an Esav, on the one hand, to honor his father more than anybody else in the history of the world honored their fathers. And at the same time, he says, I can't wait till my father dies so I can kill Yaakov. How do you figure that one out? Right? Because he's a baltaiva. He can't control his stivus. He has the one sign of the kosher and the other one. So not only does he fool, of course he fools everybody else, because he's using the good quality that everybody says, oh, he must be a very kosher person. And since he's a kosher person, so now we could trust him. He's using the kosher sign to exonerate himself. But really, that is the tool of the treifness of him. Do you follow how heinous this is? And honestly, the person himself doesn't even see anything wrong with it. You know, it's not like the classic con artist. The classic con artist, he knows he's a crook. These people, Hitler did not believe he was a cruel person. I do not believe he believed he was a cruel. He believed he was doing God's work. No different than Farrakhan and all these other bozos think they're doing God's work, getting rid of the termites. Right? And they mamish believe it. And other people who see them and they see, wow, they're so sincere. They believe this too. It's no coincidence that, where's the next source we want over here? Medrash Tanchuma, source 13. tells us the juxtaposition between Parsha Zohar, remember what Amalek did to us, what's the section of the Torah in Sefer and Parshas Kisetze, that's right before that, is the laws of false weights and measures. You can't have false weights and measures. So what's the connection? So the Mishnah says, if you see a generation whose weights are false, know that the kingdom of Amalek is going to contend with you. What does one thing have to do with the other? Where's the mita connected mita? Where's the measure against measure over here? The answer is, what's the idea of false measurements? Right? That he's doing everything really kosher. Listen, if you want to rob and cheat people, take a gun out and hold them up. I want your money. Give it to me. Says, you know, I have a nice clean store. I got these nice shiny measurements. So how much would you like? You like a pound? Sure. Let's weigh it. Let me be very exact. You know what? I'll even go a little bit more on your side, just to make sure. I'll give you 1.02 pounds, just to make sure it's okay. Oh, he's such a gentleman. But he's such a chazer, he initially weighted them like a third of a pound off. A third of a pound off. So, because, and of course, you know, we come up with the line that, and I said, how could you cheat? You know, we don't, business is different. That's all. Yeah. So, and everybody thinks he's such a wonderful guy. And he thinks he's such a wonderful guy. He starts believing himself. He says, what do you mean? I have such a clean store. I'm even giving the benefit of the doubt, etc., etc. Right? This is the kind of concealed falseness that the person themselves, deep down inside, don't even know how corrupt they are. And they think this is business as usual. So Hashem says, if you're going to behave that way, then the exact same thing is going to happen to you. Amalek is going to come to you that same way. So whenever we get hit by Amalek, we need to know that that Amalek problem has already been lying inside of us. Okay? And you see this in so many ways in Yiddishkeit, where outwardly we look like we really care about other people, but because we really are such chazerim, we're prepared to destroy them without them realizing, without you yourself realizing it. So that becomes the challenge that we have when we have to deal with Amalek. Okay, now, where's the next point we got to go to over here? This is really a tough...
That's very difficult.
Tough issue over here. So now, we have to figure out what's going on with the Jewish people over here. What's going on with the Jewish people over here? Jewish people are going to be attacked by Amalek. All right? So that's who they're being attacked by. So obviously, they have to be suffering from this same issue, or they would not be attacked this way, right? So let's see exactly what's going on over here. And, it's got to make sure I get everything in order over here. So let's think about Mordechai, and now we'll talk about the real issue over here. And this is going to lead us into the issue of disguises. Why we wear masks and disguises on Purim over here. Okay? Well, the Gemara is telling us there's two reasons why there was this decree, why we deserve to be killed, because we enjoyed the meal and because we were worshiping idols. Right? Okay, that's the real reason why we were destroyed. Wasn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody know that? Did anybody know that? Yes. All the Jewish people, as Haman is about to makes a decree that the Jewish people are going to get killed, this was all disguised. This was all disguised. And now let's understand, what does it mean, haster, haster? A normal disguise, what's a normal disguise? A normal disguise is I dress up like a lion, and everybody knows that I'm not a lion. And therefore, they know, well, that's just a lion on the outside. But behind there, there's somebody not a lion. And we know that when we're looking at the disguise, we know that there is a disguise there. That's a disguise. But what if a person goes with a face that everybody thinks that's the real face? What if I could be dressed up like a lion and everybody believes it's a lion? And nobody even thinks it's a costume. That's haster haster. That's a disguise within a disguise. A regular disguise is, okay, I see this, but I know that that ain't the guy. A disguise within a disguise says that we really believe that that's what we see is exactly what's there. It's a disguise within a disguise. The biggest disguise is that you don't know there's a disguise. Okay, so now let's see exactly how the story plays out over here. If you think about Haman's decree, and CNN went to all the Jewish people and say, why do you think we're having this problem? What would have been the collective answer? It's all Mordechai's fault.
Because he sits in the
It's place. All Mordechai's fault.
Okay.
He was the one that didn't want to bow down to him. We told him not to bow down. We all were bowing down. As a matter of fact, it's so true. They tapped Haman's lottery room, and we overheard him saying, you know, I'm not going to take revenge on him. I'm going to take revenge on the whole people. He leaked it out to the press, and now and the Jews, they understood that as well. And what kind of an idiot? We told them not to do this. We told them that when the wicked are on the rise, you hang low, right? And that they're going to start believing him. Mordechai's going to say, well, you remember that party from 9 years ago we told you not to go to? 9 years ago. Remember 63 years ago when you were bowing down to my Nebuchadnezzar? That's why it's coming. They're going to say, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Now, you got to understand, you know, when the Jews were, we said in the story, they were doing it outwardly. Starting outwardly, but keep doing things outwardly for a while. You start believing it inside as well. You start believing it as well. So this was not good. This was not good. The Jews were in serious trouble. They were seriously assimilating. You know, it could be the first time they bowed down, they didn't mean it. But I don't know, after a while, you start meaning it. You go to a party, you enjoy a party. Like, what's going on over here? So Mordechai understands what normally happens. See, the Jews were disguising themselves to themselves. And they believed they were really proper, citizens of the realm. That was their disguise. And not only that, but they really believed that they were. They really believed that they were. And when that happens, that's the end of the Jewish people. Well, but when we did it, you know, we didn't mean it. We didn't mean it. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, you may not have meant it the first time, but you mean it. And you should be destroyed, plain and simple. But we only did it on the outside. Well, doesn't matter. You're going to get wiped out. And Mordechai knows there's no way out. Unless they really do a teshuvah. But the teshuvah has to be in the very area where they had sinned. So let's think about this. So Mordechai is not bowing down. Now Mordechai knows exactly what's going on. And Mordechai, his love for the Jewish people is so great. He is mamish moser nefesh for the Jewish people. Now how is he going to do this? The only way he could do this is he has to force the Jews to come to terms with who they are. And they have to, you know, you can play games and fool yourself and you can put a mask on for a long time. But then all of a sudden, your push comes to shove. You got to say, is this who you really are or not? But that only comes in very difficult situations. Like the Baal HaTanya says, you know, every Jew, no matter how bad they are, deep, deep down, at least the Baal HaTanya in his day said, no matter how far a Jew is, he'll give his life away for Hashem. How is that? Because they don't think they're going that far away from Hashem when they're sinning. When the Jew eats treif and doesn't keep Shabbos, he still thinks he's a good Jew.
No.
What are you talking about? He thinks they're a good Jew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing. Wait a minute, I'm a nice person. But the fact you're a behemoth doesn't rationalizes everything else. You think you're a good Jew. You become the pig yourself.
Oh, we believe in
the kosher pig.
We still believe.
The kosher pig. Well, I'm a good Jew. So wait a minute. But you're such a good Jew. Are you going to be willing to worship God onto the cross? I never do that. Then you have to realize, then you can't do the other things either. When push comes to shove. Mordechai had to create a push-come-to-shove situation at risk of his own life. So what does he do? What does he do? He is the one that is going to perpetrate the potential annihilation of the Jewish people in a controlled situation where he can be in the position to get them to do tshuva. What I mean to say is if he doesn't do anything, he's going to die after 120 years. Esther's going to die after 120 years. The Sanhedrin's going to die after 120 years. Then the pogrom's going to come. It's going to be nobody there to help them. And they're going to get wiped out. So while he's still here, he says, I'm going to do a controlled persecution, but I can still guide the Jews through it. And that will get ourselves out of the situation. So what does he do? He understands that he's not going to bow down to Haman. He could get killed on the spot for that. He's doing that, and he's doing it, and the Jews are watching him do that. And they're watching him get them into big potential trouble. Now, what is interesting, what did not happen in the story that should have happened?
He wasn't killed.
The Jews should have killed him. And they didn't. Because he was pushed, it was coming to shove. After all, you know, we know all about Sephardim. They're wonderful. And there is Sephardim, like Ashkenazim. You have many Sephardim who, let's say, aren't religious. But the difference between them and Ashkenazim is, but boy, do they respect their rabbis. There's something about, they may feel, okay, maybe I'm not such a good guy. And maybe I think I'm a kosher Jewish pig. Whatever. But one thing, the rabbi, whoa, he's holy man. They would never dare, the traditional Sephardim, as not religious they would be, respect for the rabbi. That's like, if you don't respect, that's like you're killing God.
That's very true.
That's how it is. And they don't keep Shabbos, they don't keep quote nothing. They're like, Mom, you see this today.
They kiss the hand.
You saw Ovadi Yosef's funeral.
Yeah.
Tens, hundreds of thousands of secular Sephardim were there.
Dying.
And they felt bad because they really believe that the rabbi is like God. They would never disrespect the rabbi. Mordechai is saying, listen, we've got to push them so that their goodness comes out. Now, where did he get this idea from? He got this idea from Pinchas. Pinchas? How did he get this idea from Pinchas? Okay. If you look at the Sephardim in Source 15, very interesting. When Pinchas came and killed Zimri, it says, Hashem said, you're going to get rewarded. Okay, that's the pasuk. You were zealous for bitocham in their midst. Sephardim has an incredible pshat. He asks the following question. You have to understand how it fits in with the other Midrashim that seem to conflict that I don't have time to get in there now. But, you know, when he went and killed Zimri, Zimri was a very old, old rabbi. He's like 250 years old. Respect the right. Pinchas was a relatively punk. Now he comes in, and this Zimri, he's leading all kinds of immoral behavior. Pinchas comes along, and he kills him. Now look what the Sephardim writes. He did it b'socham. She'asa nikmasi le'enei kulam. He did my vengeance in front of every day. Kidei shibirosam zeh. When they saw it, ve'lo yimchu, and they didn't protest what he did, yechupar ala asher lo michu b'poshim. It will atone for the fact they didn't protest against the ones who were sitting the whole problem with the Moabite women. And that's how he took back the anger that Hashem had.
Amazing.
The Jews were supposed to protest when the crime was happening at the beginning. So Pinchas says, there's only one tikkun for them. I have to kill this guy right in front of them. And they have to hold back. And make up for the fact that they did it before. I've got to give them a chance to atone for their mistake. And by not protesting what I'm doing and showing respect and cover the Torah, that's how they're going to fix it up. So Mordechai says, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to do the same thing. And therefore, he doesn't bow down because, number one, he knows that's what's going to get him in trouble. Okay? And he wants to see if the Jews are going to have the chutzpah to kill him or not. Or they're going to have respect for the Rav. Even though what he seems to be doing is a terrible thing. Okay? So, and if they will hold back, then they'll be doing just like the Jewish people did with Pinchas. And that already is showing that you're beginning to see who your inner Jewish person is already. You've got to start to believe that you're not that secular Persian person. You're not a Persian. You're a Jew. A Persian might kill Mordechai, but a Jew's not going to kill Mordechai. So that's why he doesn't tell anybody his secret. He wants to give them this test that they won't protest against him. And that was the key. And if you want to know, where was the key to salvation? That was the key. Right there. You get a lot of the sleepers in the Purim story. Think, well, they all prayed together, this or that. Yeah, that was good. But they had to do things before that. And this was an important thing. And this, again, where we... What gets explained at the end? And again, what's the haster astir? That what did they really think? They really thought that the worst thing that was that Mordechai wasn't bowing down. And that's what's getting us into all this trouble. If you ask everybody, why are we having these problems? The answer is, it's Mordechai not bowing down. Yet, they respected him. Right? Why is that a concealment within the concealment? Because the Jews didn't know the real reason. The real reason was they ate at the party and they bowed down to idols. That was the real reason. Not only they didn't know the real reason, they come up with the wrong reason. That it's Mordechai's fault. That's the haster astir. And that becomes the test. That, you know, they're not going to believe that it was 18,000 people enjoying the meal in Shushan. Or hundreds of thousands of people that were bowing down to idols. And therefore, then the next step is, he says, okay, now we gotta fast. To try to help our lives. But what's the fasting really doing? The fast is making a tikkun for eating at a party they shouldn't have been eating at. And now you fast at a party. You fast now, that's going to make up for that. Okay? And they listened to Mordechai, in spite of the fact that they had criticisms against him. And that's what he had to bring out in the Jew. That no matter how much you're far away, you still got to show, but if push comes to shove, who are you really? Even if the rabbi does something stupid to your eyes, and it looks like you're going to get us in trouble. Are you going to listen or not? We already had that problem 9 years before, and Mordechai told him not to go to the party. And they didn't listen. Because they were believing that they were Persians. So he says, I've got to create a potential catastrophe to them to wake them up a little bit. So first I have to do something that looks like I'm getting them in trouble, and therefore, are you still willing to respect me? And now that we're in trouble, I'm going to say the only solution is we got to pray to God. And they're going to say, what do you pray to God? The problem was you. Let's get rid of you. Imagine they say, let's just kill Mordechai, and then Haman will go reason out of the thing. He says, no, we have to pray to God. And they listen to him, and they pray to God. So this was the hester shel hesterit. We're like, you're so far off. The one who really is the problem was you. And not only you don't see it was you, you see it's the one that's trying to save you is the problem. How often do we have that in our lives? That the people want to help us, we say they're our enemies,
hysterical.
And we're the enemy.
Hysterical.
Who wants to, we're the ones who are destroying ourselves.
It's hysterical. Hysterical.
Yes. And the same thing he tells Esther. To fast for 3 days. You know how ridiculous that is? You're going to go to the king and you want to make a good presentation. You're going to look like a schmata after 3 days. But she accepts what he's saying. So this is the hastara betoch hastara. To know that the outward appearances totally cannot be believed. You cannot believe what the outward appearances is. You need rabbis. You need people to guide you how to understand this. And don't be fooled that the outward appearance has anything to do with reality. And that's what Eov says, for example, in Source 16. Or ubasar talbi shedi, you clothed me with skin and flesh and wove me of bones and sinews. And that's what a person thinks he is. People think they're just skin and bones. And they have no neshama. They don't know these things. So people only make judgments by what they see. And quite often they make judgments of Hashem the same thing. When it's Anochi, Haster, Haster, Panai. And we have all kinds of terrible criticisms about Hashem and this and that, where the truth is, it says in Divrei Yomim 17, Hod v'hadar lefanav, os v'ched v'bim kamo. Glory and majesty are before him, strength and joy are in his place. There's only good things that come from Hashem. Nothing bad comes from Hashem. So this was part of the issue, that the Jews were falling into the Amalek trap. And the Jews were believing that the external was the real part of them. And they could be led to believe that all these other things are our problems and not ourselves being the problems. So he has to get them to understand that maybe they themselves, they are the problems as well. Okay, now where is this all coming from? And where did this all start from? That the Jew... And so Mordechai was successful in getting the Jew to see that what you think you are, you're not what you are. Even though you really think, you think that you're a Persian, and you think deep inside you're a Persian, Mordechai convinced him deep inside you're not a Persian. How was he able to do that? Because he still remembers the battle of Esav and Yaakov. The battle of Esav and Yaakov. Who's the firstborn? Who's the real major power? Esav or Yaakov? The one on top, the one who came out first, or the one who was designed for first? So let's go back to the story. So source 18. So what happens? Yitzchak smells the garment that Yaakov's wearing. It says, Vayigash, Vayishaklo, Vayarachas Rech Begodov. He smells his clothing and he blesses him. We know the Gemara, we know, so why, when he smelled the clothing, did he bless him? So look at the Gemara. So then says, the word Begodov can also, without the dot signs, can be Bogdov.
Yeah, to cheat.
No, rebels. A traitor. So Yitzchak smelled traitors, and he blessed them.
What?
So the Medrash in the source way goes through a long Medrash, and I don't have time to go through it. You can go through it on your own. But basically, he saw that descending from Yaakov would be two very interesting characters. One of them was Yosef Meshichsa, and one was Yaakov Mistroros. Similar types of stories. Yosef Meshisa was a Jew who went off the derech. And he became part of with the enemies of the Jews. And when they came into the Beis HaMikdash and they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, so they said to you, they were still scared to go in and take anything. So they go to this Yosef Meshisa and say, you go in and bring something out and you can keep it. And once we see someone came in and out, we'll go and get things. So he goes in and he takes out the golden menorah. So they look and say, listen, Mac, you know, we say, hey, you took the best thing. You know, no, you just can't take that. Just go in and get something else. Just go in and get something else. And he refused. And they said, listen, we'll give you 3 years' worth of tax money. He refused. He wouldn't do it. He said, it's enough that I angered my God once. Should I anger him again? What did they do? They tortured him to death.
Wow.
So what happened? He did tshuva at the end of his life. Yaakov Mistroros was the nephew of Rabbi Yossi. He was riding a horse on Shabbos. That's how far off the derech he went. And his uncle was also on a horse, the Greeks leading him to death. There's a whole discussion that went on over there. I don't have time to go into it. And Yaakov was kind of insulting his uncle, said, look what's happening. Look, see, me and you, I'm on this good horse, a nice white horse. I know that you're being led to be killed. Well, you know, he says, well, if you have it so good, I'm going to have it better. You can imagine, if you have it so good, how better? He said, what? You're going to get better? Is anybody better than you? Suddenly he turns and says, yeah, you're right. If I'm suffering this, can you imagine how much you're going to suffer? Whoa, that hit him hard. What did his nephew do? He went and gave himself the four executions of death upon himself. And we find out that the uncle who was dying said, I see he's going to Gan Eden before me. Oh. These are the two stories that Yitzchak saw. And by seeing that, he goes and he blesses his son. So what do you mean? What? He's seeing traitors and he's blessing them? What's going on over here? So the answer to this, and the answer to the question of why didn't Rivka just go out and tell Yitzchak what's going on, is the following. Rivka could have gone, the Chiddush HaRim says this beautiful answer, it's 21. She definitely could have gone to Yitzchak and said, listen, you don't got the story straight. Esau's a Russia. Yaakov's a tzaddik. I have a nevuah. Yitzchak would for sure have blessed Yaakov. But what would the blessing have been? The blessing would have been, Yaakov will be blessed. What happens to descendants of Yaakov who don't behave like Yaakov? They'll not be blessed. They'll not be blessed. What happens to descendants of Yaakov who put on clothes of Esau because of the pressures that life creates for them? And they go off the derech. Are they going to get blessed?
Yeah.
No. If Yaakov goes in as the tzaddik, he only blesses the tzaddik. If Rivka says, bless Yaakov, he is the good one. I have the prophecy. Bless him. Yitzchak would have done it. But what would he have blessed? He would only bless a Yaakov prototype.
I know.
And only if we're Yaakovs do we get blessed. Well, guess what? Rivka, the mother of Klaisel, knows. She already sees that, you know what, Aaron? It won't always be Yaakovs.
So
there's going to be Esavs.
So
or there's going to be Yaakovs who think they're Esavs.
That's right.
They're going to be Yaakovs who are dressed up in Esav's clothes. And they think they're Esav. So they look at themselves the outside as an Esav. Who, where are they going to get a bracha from? So she says, Yaakov, you dress up like Esav. Because I want the bracha to come to my great-great-grandchildren who think they're Esav. But inside they're Yaakov.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful.
But really they're Yaakov. And how do we know? And that's... Now, here's the point. This is what Yitzchak thought was with Esav. Yitzchak said, of course Esav's a bad guy. He knew Esav was a bad guy. But he figured, you know, it's only the outside. But deep down, there's always something good in a Jew. Deep down, a Jew is a Jew, is a Jew. And now, Mamash Yitzchak, he thinks he's going to die. He's going to bless his son. Maybe this is the moment of... of the Sephardi giving Kavod Harav. This is the moment where the Sephardi feels, oh, yeah, it's really, I should be better. This is this moment. And now look, Esav, who normally speaks very gruffly, but you see at this auspicious moment on the Seder night, when he knows he's going to get a blessing, he's even speaking the way Yaakov does, the way I always wanted it to be. You see, deep down in Esav, there's something good in Esav too. Only because he's a hunter, and he thinks he's a hunter. But now at this special moment, the real Esav is coming through. So he thinks. So when he hears, Hakol Kol Yaakov, Yidam Esav, perfect! That's exactly what I wanted Esav to be! Mm-hmm. He's showing me in this beautiful moment what he could be, and I'm going to bless him. And of course I know there's going to be a lot of wickedness from him. But you know, when you show him what he really could be, he could really be an amazing thing. And that's what he gives him the blessing for. So he was absolutely certain that he was giving the blessing to the right one. He was, but he wasn't. Because the truth is, Esav was so bad, he didn't have anything. Esav was so amolek, he was the total pig. And Esav couldn't see himself even inside as anything bad at all. And it wasn't. What he heard in Yaakov was his dream of what he hoped Esav would be. But it wasn't Esav, it was Yaakov. Now you understand why. So I think most of these questions are answered now. They only did it to the outside. So Hashem only did it to the outside. Yeah, that's right. But you know what? If you don't do the outside... it doesn't stay the outside forever. It gets in. If you really think you're an Esav, if you really think you're an Amalek, you think you're a Persian on the outside, then you think that's what you are on the inside too. And therefore, I'll just kill you on the outside. And that's good enough, because I'm just killing the outside, because there's nothing inside to save. Unless somebody can turn you inside out and let you see who the inside of who you really are. But if not, then you're dead. Well, but they never really met. No, you, over time you really mean it. So now only because Mordechai created the situation, this is astir, astir, it's so not clear. that we mamish, we think it's 100%. It's, we don't even know that it isn't this, but we think it's totally something else. What's the biggest concealment? Is the Jew thinks he's a Persian. Isn't that haster? A Jew really is a chelak elokam ima. And now he masquerades as a Persian, and he really thinks he's a Persian. But the truth is, he's not a Persian. That's haster. So what do you need? You need something like a Mordechai to be able to wake the person up and shake it out of him. So what is Mordechai? As soon as he saw the problems, he says, I've got to create the situation to wake them up. So therefore, when Achashverosh is a plot to kill him, he says, I can't have him kill him because he's the only guy who can be foolish enough to make a decree to kill all the Jews. If Esther's here, it's going to be quiet. But we never do tshuva, and we keep living like Persians, and then we're going to get totally annihilated. So I've got to create a potential Holocaust situation, but still I'm here. I'm still here, and I can control the solution. If we wait till let things go the way they are, and let Achashverosh get killed, and Esther's the queen, well, one day Esther's going to die, I'm going to die, and there's no way we can get them back. Mm-hmm. Go try being Makarv Jew when things are going well with them. It doesn't work. It only goes 99% of the time people do tshuva when they see there is no way out. And they have to come face to face with reality. And Mordechai says, therefore I'm going to let Achashverosh live. Therefore I'm not going to bow down to Haman. I'm going to make Haman want to kill everybody. And I want everybody to think it's because of me. And I still now is going to be... He said, either way, I got nothing to lose. Because if I do nothing, they're finished. They're already finished. There's a decree in heaven that they're finished. So what do I got to lose except that I get killed early? That's all I lose. So he creates this whole scenario to bring them to the point where they can do tshuva. And that's why I think that answers all the questions. Now you understand this is a deeper understanding of why we dress up on Purim. Because the original dress up was Yaakov. The first battle with Amalek was with Yaakov and Haman, and Yaakov had a dress up. And he dressed up like what? He dressed up like Esav. To show that for all of history, that even if a Jew dresses up like Esav, and he thinks he's Esav, and that's such a haster, that's such a cover up, then how could it be a Jew's a chelek elokam imal? He acts like an Esav, and he really thinks like he's an Esav. And Mordechai has to be able to take off that mask off of the Jew. And how? By putting him in such a difficult situation where they have to come to grips with the fact is, am I totally giving myself up totally or not? And that's when the Jew is able to make the turn in his life. So that's the dress up there. And that's what we have to do every Purim. Every Purim during the year, many of us have been forced to dress up in certain ways we normally wouldn't want to dress up. And we feel forced. And really that's not what we really are. But over time that becomes who we are. So then what's Mordechai's job? What's the job of all the other Jews? Is to help these Jews and to say, no, you're really not that. And I want you to believe as much as you think that you're going, you're dressed up so much, you're like a Molek, who you think you're really doing the right thing. You're so far gone, you can't even see how your kosher sign really is your treif sign, making the treif sign work even harder. We have to be able to have them see what they really are. So when we're putting on that mask, what we're trying to say is the whole year long, we've been putting on a mask, when's the time to take off the mask? And by the end of Purim, we'll help you able to take off the mask and see who you really are. So we should all be zocha to unmask ourselves this Purim, and that really is the total destruction of Amalek, and that's how we fulfill the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek by taking off the mask that we have.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.